Atamariu, kia ora te whanau. Good morning and welcome to Newstalk ZB. Jack Tamen, the chair with you through to midday today. And my guest this morning is Dan Buckingham. So in 1999, Dan was enjoying life as an 18-year-old uni student at Otago when things changed in his life. A casual game of rugby with his mates ended when Dan broke his neck and spinal cord damage left him disabled. Dan reinvented himself. His life changed track. He spent 16 years as a wheel black and is now the general manager of Attitude TV, where he started as a researcher and reporter and made his way up the ranks. Dan's next challenge is the New York Marathon, which he's doing next month to raise money for the Catwalk Trust. He's with us this morning. Kia ora, good morning, Dan.
Morning, Jack. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. I know you do a lot of interviews and you do a lot of media stuff. Does it always start with take us back to 1999 and what happened?
No, not to be honest. It's sort of, I try to be on the other side of the camera these days and ask the questions. But I have told the story a few times, and I'm always up for telling it because I think people are just genuinely intrigued about disability and what happens, and sometimes there's a bit of fear around it or fear of getting it wrong. So, yeah, I'm always open and keen to talk about it.
Well, do you mind telling us then what you were doing in 1999? You were at Otago University and living the good life.
I was. It was a very good time. First year uni student out in Otago and living the dream. And still playing footy. You know, I kind of came through the first 15 playing at high school, and a few of my mates decided when they hit uni to take a break or play a bit of social rugby. But I just loved my footy, you know, just an average kid who wanted to play a bit of rugby and carried on and was playing club rugby down there. And this one game just had one of those moments that didn't go to plan. And basically I put my head in the wrong place in a scrum and fractured and dislocated my sixth and seventh vertebrae. And that was it. It was pretty quick. Basically, it was a bit, well, as I say, a bit of a blur. But from what I understand, basically I just dropped to the ground and I was saying, I can't feel my legs. And people just left me there and kept me pretty still and waited for the ambulance to arrive.
Yeah. God, that must have just been a harrowing couple of days as you came to understand what had happened.
Yeah, it's a bit of a blur from, I guess, the shock of it and just the memory sort of blanking a few things out. And also I was under a general anaesthetic pretty quickly after that. I got flown to Christchurch Hospital and got operated on and then sort of really came to and became lucid. I was in Burwood Hospital already, the spinal unit.
Yeah.
And that was the start of a 3.5 month stay there where I sort of started to learn about this new life and this new way of living.
And so what was your injury once you came to understand it? Were you a paraplegic or a tetraplegic? And what is the difference?
Yeah, so I'm a tetraplegic. So basically you have a whole lot of vertebrae running up and down your spine. And whenever you break your neck or your back, where the level you break it, that is basically from there you are paralyzed. So all these nerves coming out of your spine, coming out of your vertebrae, that's the level, and those are the ones that from there below are damaged.
Right.
So for me, I broke six and seven, C6 and 7, which is up in your neck, cervical. And anywhere up there, you're going to have some nerves affected in your hands and arms.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate. Like, I haven't lost a lot of function, but then from below that, from my chest down, is basically paralyzed.
Right. You know, when you hear stories about people who've had accidents and damaged their spinal cord, often the kind of the cliched storyline, and I don't like using that term, but you know, often the storyline is, oh, it was a few days afterwards in hospital, I was lying there and reconsidering my life, and I saw two tracks, and it was kind of a T intersection, and there were two paths to follow, and I chose the positive path. Was there any sort of watershed philosophical moment for you while you were at Burwood?
No, I think it was a bit more boring than that. I was just sort of just took a bit more time, I think. So initially you sort of woke up and you're sort of getting your bearings and it's quite a lot going on and a lot to take in.
Yeah.
But then it's just a sort of process you're getting back into. You got all these goals in front of you from, first of all, it's feeding yourself to sitting up in bed to getting into a wheelchair and then making your way down to the gym. And there's this process. And for me, it was 3.5 months while I was in hospital and things just kind of move along very quickly. So there was no watershed moment, but I think probably those 3.5 months were very formative and then getting back home. And after that, I'd say even the first 1-2 years, it was really getting to know myself and where I was going after that.
Do you think that your stage of life had anything to do with that? Because, you know, first year uni student, Otago, 1999, it's not what you would usually think of as being someone at the height of maturity. I would have thought this kind of forced you to grow up overnight.
I think a big thing that helped me was getting into wheelchair rugby. I found out about that very early on. I was at the spinal unit and the Wheel Blacks were in town for a tournament, and I went down to watch them train, and I seen a lot of guys who are very, had been through a similar injury and were young guys just living a really good life, and that kind of took me on a different path. And so yeah, what you're saying is basically true. I was able to pivot to this other life and this other opportunity that was there in front of me. And what I think is kind of tough for some people probably is they have to go back to their old lives, and everything they used to do is right in front of them. Where I took a very different track after that.
Yeah, you just completely shifted. Let's talk about wheelchair rugby, because you had some enormous success with the Wheel Blacks. 16 years, eh?
Yeah, it was a great career. A lot of memories, a lot of great times, a lot of highs and a lot of lows as well. But that's high performance sport. You take the wins, but it can be some devastating losses.
Well, let's focus on the positives to start with. Let's go with that Paralympic gold medal.
Yeah, that was a magic time. Still looking back on it, it was just an unbelievably sort of crazy time of learning and just feeling so privileged to be a part of this environment where we had a great coach come on with Grant Sharman and brought on all these such exciting things like nutrition, sports psychology, just really high performance values embedded into the sport that up until then had sort of gone along with a lot of sort of bravado and will in terms of the public. You know, they were good players and wanted to do well, but they didn't have the science behind it.
Yeah.
And we just had such a great build-up. We arrived in Athens in 2004, still ranked sixth in the world, so we're the underdogs, but we had this great, massive belief in ourselves that we'd done the work and we were ready to do this, and everything fell into place after that.
Yeah, it's an amazing sport, wheelchair rugby, and I remember watching Murder Ball for the first time, and lots of our listeners might be familiar with Murder Ball. It's a documentary, maybe 10 or 12 years old, about the US wheelchair rugby team. And the thing that struck me about watching that film for the first time and actually going on to interview some of those players from that team when I think we had the Wheelchair Rugby World Champs in New Zealand was just how crazy some of those guys are. Like, I can't think of a more physical sport.
Yeah, it is, and that's one of the great things about it. There's a lot of physicality and just a great outlet for that. But it's also mixed with, it's a very tactical game, there's a lot of strategy. But then, of course, off-court as well. You know, you got all these young guys just travelling the world and having a great time, and that's where you get the sort of scenarios that play out in Motorball, where you get to see the inside of, you know, what people may perceive as just this bunch of disabled guys over there, you know, they see really these are guys living a great life and having a great time.
Yeah, I think Mark Zupan might be the guy I remember most. I think he was one of the senior guys in the American team, and he was just totally nuts. Like in a great way, you know. And just, you know, I would have thought for a lot of guys who still had a lot of that you know, athletic energy, who'd perhaps been injured, you know, whilst doing athletic things, wheelchair rugby was particularly special because it just gave you that outlet to, you know, really let off some steam.
That's exactly it. And that's the camaraderie and all that goes with it as well. And a sport like that where you're playing each other so much, you know, you have the tightness of your own team, but you get to know the other guys around the world as well.
Yeah.
I'm still good mates with Zupan. He was out here. He comes out to New Zealand quite a bit. He was out there into last year and still the same old guy. We're on a large night out in Ponsonby. I guess starting to mature, but now he's got a young boy and, you know, a few more responsibilities than he used to back then.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were the kind of the glamour boy of the Wheel Blacks? I always remember, I think I even heard you once referred to as the Dan Carter of the Wheel Blacks. The pretty boy.
Now that I'm retired and just holding on to a bit of glory, I'll take it. But no, I think we had some fantastic players. Tim Johnson is probably the one that really made a difference, and he was just the brains of the team. He's a guy who was ducks of St. Bede's and had a master's in electrical engineering, and he just analysed this game to the nth degree, and having that knowledge and experience really made us great.
Yeah. Let's talk about New York and your next athletic pursuit. So 16 years playing for the Wheel Blacks, but you have set your sights to something rather different, the New York Marathon.
Yeah, finishing up with the Wheel Blacks at the end of last year, was 2017 was looking a little light. So outside of the 9-to-5 grinds, I wanted a new challenge. And I actually did a half marathon 10 years ago when I was based in the States. and I really enjoyed it, and I just didn't have the opportunity to do it again. Just juggling work and Wheel Blacks was pretty full on as it was.
Yeah.
So I had this opening and thought I might just be one and done, so I might as well make it big and go for New York.
So how does it work?
How do I race?
Well, yeah, how does it race? What are the logistics for racing in New York?
Yeah, it's quite a different tier again, just doing a marathon and a wheelchair. So every sport we have different chairs. So the rugby chair is quite an embattled sort of protected chair where you can smash each other. Yeah. Whereas the racing chair is very light, very streamlined. It's three wheels with one wheel way out in front. Not a good turning circle, but very good in the straight line. And yeah, so quite a different sport and a different mentality for me for training as well. I had some good advice. Someone looked at my training diary and said, man, you just got to up the hours. You got to put in some time on the road.
So, oh, really?
So that's been the last few months.
Yeah. You must get massive arms.
Trying to. I'm away. Still working on it.
I a couple of years ago when I was in New York, I covered a guy called Brian Coker doing the New York Marathon. And he was a man who was caught in the Pine Gall building in the Christchurch earthquake, was wheelchair bound thereafter, came over to New York and did it. And he said something. Honestly, seeing him do it kind of inspired me to run it a year or two later. And he said something that really stuck with me. He said it was kind of a spiritual experience. And he wasn't a particularly spiritual guy, I don't think, but he just found it to be, in New York City, that marathon, something really extra special.
I've heard some magic things about the people on the sidelines. You know, a million plus people cheering you on, you know, driving you all the way through, and 50,000 people running it. It does sound like a phenomenal experience. So really looking forward to it. Really can't wait. Some of the guys on the team going with us have done it before and just said it is like nothing you can imagine.
Yeah. It's a long day though, Dan. And if I can offer you any advice, wrap up really warm because you do a lot of mucking around at the start.
Yeah, I've heard it's a very early start in a few logistics, trying to corral 50,000 people.
Yeah.
But great initiative there as well. They said just take some small clothes, old hoodies, and then you dump them when you're about to run, and they collect them all up and give them to the homeless.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really special experience. You're going to be raising money for the Catwalk Trust.
That's behind what we're doing, as well as much as it is, you know, looking forward to a big challenge and something to tick off the bucket list. It's coincided really well with being able to be involved with Catwalk Trust. So I've always, you know, known about them and known Katrina Williams, who is the founder, and really respected what they do and what they're about.
What do they do?
So the Catwalk Trust is set up to raise money to help find a cure for spinal cord injury. So Katrina herself injured herself back in 2002. So she was a champion show jumper and came off a horse and broke her neck. And all her friends got behind her and started fundraising for her, and she really just said, no, I want this to go to something bigger, and started the Catwalk Trust. And yeah, it's just gone from strength to strength and raising a huge amount of money that goes straight into the research, and a lot of it done here in New Zealand at the over at Auckland University.
Is it a bit of a funny position for you and the Catwalk Trust? I'm interested in your relationship with the Catwalk Trust because I know you do so much to promote people with disabilities, and your work with Attitude TV is right up there. But it's interesting, isn't it, that the Catwalk Trust, it's not as though it's indicating that people with disabilities or people with spinal cord injuries are in the wrong or anything like that. But you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like we're trying to fix people with those injuries.
Yeah, you've really nailed it there. It is a dichotomy, you know. And it can be played on to an extent, I think, where people, it's easy to tug at the heartstrings and say, you know, these people over here are really suffering and we need this cure, when reality is people with disabilities live great lives. And, you know, that's what I do. And my way of advocating is just living a full life and showing that a full life can be lived.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think, you know, this is something that can be done, and it could take away a lot of heartache for a lot of people. And, you know, if we get really pragmatic about it, save the health system and ACC a lot of money.
Yeah.
By not having these injuries, you know, it is a huge life-changing experience. And if we can fix that, I think it's a great thing to do.
Yeah. You are so articulate, Dan. I really enjoyed speaking with you. And you're doing some great work with Attitude TV. You enjoying that gig?
Attitude is, yeah, it's been a dream run, really. 10 years now for me with the company.
Oh.
And, yeah,
you're an old man.
I've been for another series. So, yeah. So just getting to tell great stories of in a lot of ways, really ordinary people, but just living extraordinary lives through living with a disability.
Yeah.
And the show itself has got to grow and evolve as we've been supported for so many years with New Zealand On Air. That's part of them supporting us is we've to show that, you know, we're not just going to stay with status quo. We're going to keep developing the show, and we've really developed it into a documentary style into the lives of these people. So, yeah, it's a privilege. It's great to work there.
Dan, you are one inspirational dude. We're going to put your fundraising page for the New York Marathon up on newstalkzb.co.nz. And I just want to leave you with the introduction line that my producer Helen wrote for you this morning. Dan Buckingham, former We All Black, TV boss, gold medal winning Paralympian, and all-round superhuman. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Jack. That's very much appreciated.